Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Went to fill up my gas tank yesterday and noticed the price at the pump at the station where I had been filling up was 10 cents higher. Looks like across the area we're about a nickel higher than we were a week ago. Is that just because of increased demand for Labor Day, or is there something going on with oil? Let's find out from Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy. Happy Labor Day, Professor Smith.
Hey, happy Labor Day to you.
What's going on? Are oil prices going up, or is this just increased demand at the pump?
We're in pretty good shape. I think you saw a little bit of a jump there day to day just because of the holiday travel, which is normal. But in general, we're producing significant amounts of oil. Louisiana isn't, but the country is. And we've got refining capacity available. So things are pretty good certainly for gasoline. I think they're a little worse for diesel. And the reason is the U.S. doesn't produce as much heavy oil as it needs, so it has to import heavy oil, and that's been a little difficult recently. So if you don't have enough heavy oil, you can't produce enough diesel fuel, and that's what's going on there.
All right, so generally good news for drivers after an unprecedented, it feels like, long period of time with really stable gasoline prices. This is just a little bit of a spike that probably won't last. But you said something else that piqued my interest there, that production is great in the U.S., but not so much in Louisiana. What's going on with Louisiana and oil jobs?
Well, I think we're still in great shape when it comes to what we call the downstream area, which is the refining and the petrochemical industry. Those continue to grow just fine. But Louisiana is no longer a major producer of crude oil. The Gulf of Mexico still produces a fair amount, almost 2 million barrels a day, but not so much Louisiana. We're down in the 70,000-80,000 barrels a day range. Total production of about 14 million a day.
Where is that oil coming in, and why is it not coming in Louisiana like it used to?
Well, the heavy oil, we never had a serious supply, but what we did have came out of places like California, which doesn't like to drill for oil anymore. And our other sources were places like Mexico and Venezuela, and you know how things are going with them. So they haven't been producing as much. At one point, we were even running the refineries here in New Orleans area with crude oil from Russia. So, I mean, it's It's an international market, but the U.S. is blessed with a lot of light, sweet crude, which people normally think of as the ideal crude oil. And it is if you want to make gasoline. It's not the ideal crude oil if you want to make diesel and fuel oil and things like that.
So what has changed for Louisiana with, if the production in the Gulf is still fairly stable, why is Louisiana getting a smaller share of that production?
Well, because we were counting for years on oil production onshore in South Louisiana. That's the crude oil that helped us win World War II, incidentally. But we counted on that oil being produced along the Gulf Coast, and then it sort of shifted to offshore and then started getting into deeper and deeper water, which is what's still going on. Most of our crude coming out of the Gulf is out, certainly in federal waters and beyond. It's you know, we used to measure depths in hundreds of feet. Now we measure them in thousands of feet, water depth. So the crude's a little more expensive to get to, and we just don't have it in the sort of south of I-12 territory of the state anymore. We produce a little bit elsewhere in the state. Of course, we're big-time producers of natural gas. Not going to run out of that anytime soon. But as a crude producer, we're, you know, way down the list, like number 11 in terms of the states.
Are we still playing a big role in that offshore industry in terms of oil field service, in terms of skilled workers, in terms of folks from Louisiana and companies based in Louisiana playing a part in that exploration and servicing that exploration?
We are, and that's, again, part of the good news. One of the issues, though, is that we've gotten much more efficient at how we produce it. So we can produce more oil, whether it's onshore or offshore, with fewer people. And we're feeling a little bit of that. But I think, in general, the service companies are doing fine. Again, they're relying on natural gas as well as oil. So, and then if you're in Texas, they're relying on natural gas liquids, which we don't produce much of ourselves. So on this Labor Day,
if people are considering a career in the petrochemical industry, if they're considering a career in oil and gas, specifically in Louisiana, is it still a good growing industry that you would advise people to go into? Are the jobs of the future going to be there, high paying jobs? And is it something that people should still be pursuing at whatever level of the industry here in Louisiana?
I think, you know, you said it the first time. It's a challenging business with a lot of good opportunities in it. We regularly place our graduates out of the Energy Institute every year before they graduate. So people are paying money to have people who are well-trained to perform that work. Our students are mostly at the graduate level, but we do have undergraduate students going into this business. And places like Nunez Junior College is turning out operators and offshore junior college type people. And again, they're all placed before they ever graduate, making salaries that are typically anywhere from 50 to 100% more than they would be paid for the same skills in any other industry. So I think oil and gas is doing just fine. I'm just saying we should put a little more stress on the gas side. A little more stress on getting the infrastructure in shape that we need to export more natural gas, because all of the LNG that's produced, and most of it's produced in Louisiana, as you know, all of that is going into the export market, and you can't export unless you meet their specifications and unless you have the proper assets. One asset that we've got problems with, of course, is the pipelines. People don't like the idea of more pipelines, but the facts of the matter are, without the pipelines, you can't export anything, and we're an increasingly export-oriented state.
So folks who are considering a career in oil and gas, you think they can have a long, healthy career, they can go into that, make a lot of money, and that career won't be going away anytime soon. Maybe they could even retire in that career. You think it's that healthy, huh?
I think it's pretty healthy. That's right.
We're talking with Eric Smith, who is professor of Tulane's Institute of Energy. When we come back, I want to talk more about the advancements we've seen recently with the LNG terminals and the growth in exporting here in Louisiana. How does that look, and should we expect to see more of that? And I welcome your questions and comments, as on this Labor Day, we're looking at different industries and how the labor market is looking. Louisiana's always had a strong oil and gas labor market, and it looks like that will continue, according to Professor Smith. What do you think? 504-260-1870. We'll share your questions and comments after this, Labor Day 2025 on WWL. Thank you for joining us on this Labor Day 2025 and spending some of your day with us. If you're laboring, we appreciate it and hope that you get some time off later. We appreciate Professor Eric Smith joining us from Tulane's Institute of Energy. We're hearing so much about the growth of these liquefied natural gas terminals, the construction we've seen from one end of Louisiana to the other. We've also, though, heard some pushback against some of that and some questions about the future of it. How is the LNG future look for the state?
I think it looks great. We're kind of uniquely positioned to be leaders in that. And quite frankly, we're leaders in the world in that at the moment. So I don't think we're going to have any issues with that. There's a, I can't say it's insatiable, but I think there's a strong appetite in the world market for it. The natural gas generally is a cleaner fuel than things that they're using. And we expect to see certainly additional competition coming down the road. But Louisiana's got the deep water ports. It's got the pipelines. It's got the, most importantly, the gas production in Texas and Louisiana to support those terminals. Quite frankly, the only thing we can do is kind of screw it up. And the way to do that is to... not recognize that the customer tends to be right most of the time. So you want to meet his anticipated requirements in terms of things like CO2 emissions in the train from getting the stuff out of the ground all the way to putting it on the ship. And that's problematic in the sense that we're passing laws all the time, at least in the last legislature, focused on making it more difficult to lay CO2 pipelines. Well, if you can't get the CO2 that's produced away from that LNG terminal, you can't produce the LNG to put on the ship. And that's just the simple facts of the matter. We have, you know, people who have strong feelings about CO2. They think it's going to catch fire if it leaks and that sort of thing. None of that's true. CO2 is used to put fires out, not to start them. So what we need
CO2.
To do
is CO2 sure definitely is not flammable. But that doesn't stop misinformation in this day and age of spreading like wildfire and social media and changing people's political leanings, feelings, and attitudes. Speaking of politics, we have seen a shift with the Trump administration away from credits and incentives for alternative energies, for developing more wind, solar, and other alternative, whether it be algae or whatever. Is that changing the way that these oil and gas and energy companies, after for many years talking about wanting an all-of-the-above policy where they participated at all levels of options in the energy market, now that the administration is de-emphasizing that and taking away the financial incentives, are these companies backing away from the research and advancements they were attempting to make in terms of alternative fuels?
Well, I think they are backing, not so much from the research, they're backing away from building new commercial facilities. And I think that's a worldwide phenomenon. That's not just true in the United States. We hear more about it in the United States than most people do, but you see the same thing with the European oil companies like the Shells and BPs and people like that. Equinor, which is a big Norwegian company that's active here in Louisiana as well. They're backing away from putting capital into businesses if they don't think they can make a return on that capital.
And
right
a lot
now,
of...
without the particularly in the U.S., without the incentives, which of course extend to the Europeans as well. They're the people that are building wind farms in the United States It extends to them as well. And if they are not seeing those subsidies, they're not seeing strong returns, they're going to hold back a little bit in terms of investing new money.
So maybe for now.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of thing you look at and you say these are big capital assets and they take a long time to amortize over time. And these guys will, you know, still keep them on the agenda, but their priority will shift down the column a little bit. At the same time, they're going to advance their projects that are more immediate in terms of return, like LNG and natural gas and yes, even crude oil.
We're just about out of time, but I do want to very quickly, in the 30 seconds we have left, a lot of experts have told me that nuclear should be a part of the equation going forward. Do you see the world, and particularly the U.S., having any appetite for building new nuclear reactors?
I do. I think we're going to see some additional reactors, but they're going to be a different type than we've seen in the past. Not these big baseload custom design facilities, but more of a mass-produced, smaller unit and more of them. So I suspect that there's going to be some pretty healthy debates about the rules on how to do that. But that's all the right way the world's going. That's the way we're going as well.
Yeah, as Chernobyl and Three Mile Island become memories and fewer people who live through it, maybe, just maybe, we'll see safer new efforts in nuclear. Thank you, Professor Smith. Thanks for taking some of your Labor Day to join us here on WWL. Back after the news to talk about the mayor's race.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
On this Labor Day, in for Tommy Tucker on the 1st of September, 2025. Ian, you got an extra $3 million laying around?
I wish.
If you did, you could start the bidding on Darth Vader's lightsaber. It is going on the auction block as part of a Hollywood memorabilia auction that is happening this week, Thursday through Saturday, featuring thousands of iconic costumes and props, including one of the actual lightsabers used by Darth Vader in the original Star Wars movies.
He didn't leave it to Luke in his will?
I guess not. The auction house prop store got a cold call from someone who just casually mentioned that they happened to have one of Darth Vader's lightsabers laying around and
wow,
wanted to know what it was worth. And they said they'll start the bidding at $3 million.
I'd expect it to go for about three times that amount. It's going to get into the $10 million range before it's all said and done. That is a huge piece of sci-fi history, and whoever gets it, good for them.
But I don't think the original ones actually made a beam of light, right? They were just, they
that
had
was all
to
special
add that
effects
in post-production. So it's just a black handle.
But still, to say that you have the one that was used in the movie, or at least in one of the movies, that's something. You know what? If I had the money, I'd be putting a bid on it myself.
I wonder if they know if it's the one that was actually used in the scene where Obi-Wan is sent to the afterlife by Darth Vader.
I don't know, but it's, wow.
If I had $3 million, I don't think that's how I'd spend it, but I don't know. What you going to do with it? You know, you're going to put it in a frame and put it above the mantle? You're going to lock it in a safe somewhere?
I would put it in a mantle and frame it, put it somewhere with where it's prominently displayed in the house, and maybe put a picture of Darth over it, or maybe a picture of James Earl Jones, and then never hear the end of it from the fiance, because why'd you spend your money on that? That's a waste.
You know, everyone only talks about the voice of Darth Vader, not the actor who was actually in the costume.
David Prowse, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Thank you. Sorry you don't have the $3 million to buy it. Sounds like you would really enjoy it.
Hey, Powerball tonight.
Cohen. Yeah, good luck. That's worth what, $1.2 billion now?
Yep, somewhere around there.
All right, plenty of money to buy all the lightsabers you want. He's Ian Ozan. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. When we come back, we're going to talk more on this Labor Day about the mayor's race. Everyone said that the mayor's race doesn't really start till after Labor Day. All right, well, now it's Labor Day, so is the mayor's race really starting? We'll find out from professor of political science and pollster at UNO, Ed Chervenak, after this. And, oh, thank you to Jordan and Master Control for the Imperial March. Perfectly timed. Thanks for joining us on this Labor Day 2025. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. We heard so much as we've watched now what has turned out to be a pretty lengthy mayoral campaign for the city of New Orleans. But we kept hearing that it really wouldn't start until after Labor Day, that voters really weren't going to pay attention until after Labor Day. Well, now it's Labor Day. So professor of political science and pollster at UNO, Ed Chervenak, joins us. Dr. Chervenak, how do things change now that we're getting into the home stretch of this race? Do you anticipate?
Well, good morning, Dave. How are you today?
Good morning. Happy Labor Day.
Yes. Happy Labor Day. Well, one of the things about Labor Day is that it marks the end of the summer distraction that, you know, prior to Labor Day, many voters are just less engaged. Summer's associated with vacations, with kids being out of school. And so there's just less of a day-to-day political focus. So now that schools have reopened, people have settled into their routines. They're more likely to pay attention to the news and the politics. And we'll also see that political coverage tends to intensify after Labor Day. Journalists, television networks devote more attention to the horse race as Election Day draws closer. And so polling, advertising will begin to spike after Labor Day, and this reinforces the perception that this is when the campaign really begins.
And early voting is less than a month away now for the October primary. So, yep, we're getting closer and closer. In terms of donors, do they change their behavior after Labor Day? Do we see more people stepping up to fund campaigns after Labor Day typically in the election cycle for New Orleans mayor every 4 years?
You know, a lot of it depends on the campaign and how aggressive they are in their fundraising. I'm sure that all three candidates or the three major candidates, probably all the candidates are on the phone asking people for donations, whether it's $5, whether it's $12,000. So that's pretty much goes throughout the campaign. I don't think that stops or that peaks at any particular time.
So while the media attention and the voter interest may increase, that's kind of the stuff. The groundwork has already been well laid, and that effort has been going on for a long time.
Because you're dealing with the politically active, the politically engaged, and you know they're paying attention year round, whereas the average voter only tunes in closer to Election Day.
Do you see any big shifts in terms of now that more people will pay attention, there'll be more media coverage? I got to imagine that we get closer. That's when more of the negative and attack advertising is going to start. Do you anticipate, because it's been pretty stable for several months now in terms of the polling, with Helena Moreno out to a huge lead in this race, maybe enough to win in the primary without a runoff?
She's certainly within the margin of error to win the office in the primary. So I would suspect that the other campaigns will be directing some negative advertising at her to prevent her from reaching that threshold of 50% plus one. It'll be interesting to see how some of these independent expenditure groups, these independent groups, will see if they'll be financing any negative advertising directed at Councilmember Marino.
Yeah, I guess that would make the most sense. You attack the person who's on top if you want to have any hope or effort successfully to beat them. And I just wonder, in this day and age, with social media being what it is and efforts to get things to go viral on the internet, do you anticipate a big shift, or do you think it's going to be these kind of minuscule shifts, if there are any, in their effort to chip away at her lead?
Her lead's been pretty steady, as you mentioned. Duplessis did pick up a couple of percentage points from July to August, but that was at the expense of Councilmember Thomas, who his support fell by 6%. So I think that, you know, the goal is to basically keep her under 50% plus one so that you can go into a runoff, and then it's a brand new campaign and you start over from scratch.
With Duplessis surging and Thomas losing ground, at least in the last round of polling, is there going to be pressure on Thomas to consider getting out of the race? Because as it looks more and more like Moreno is maintaining this big lead, we'll see if it grows or if they can chip away at it or not. But you have two black male candidates that are longtime politicians that seem to have a lot of similar, at least on the face of it, qualities, different platforms, different allegiances, different political friends, I guess you would say. But is there going to be pressure to just make it one of them challenging her in the primary? Because if they both stay in, it could well end up that both of them lose, right?
Well, the goal is to, you know, come in second. If she's held under, if, you know, Councilmember Marino is held under 50% plus one. And so they're both statistically tied with one another. So there's no real need for Councilmember Thomas to drop out. He could, you know, surge towards the end, and Duplessis lose a couple percentage points. So I don't see any, I don't see there's going to be any pressure for him to get out.
We're talking with Ed Chervenak, pollster and political science professor at UNO. When we come back, we will take a look at what could move the needle significantly and get him to make some prognostications, perhaps. We'll see. And we'll find out, historically, have there ever been any huge shifts between Labor Day and Election Day in the mayor's race? And what about the indictment of the sitting mayor? How does that affect the race? We'll talk to Professor Chervenak about that after this on WWL. Pollster, professor at UNO, Ed Chervenak is our guest as we're looking ahead to the home stretch and the race to be mayor of New Orleans. Professor, like I, you have been at this a fairly decent amount of time and have had the opportunity to witness a lot of these elections. Do you recall historically where, as voters start paying more attention after Labor Day, that we have seen instances where there is a big shift in the way voters are leaning in the mayoral race?
It usually takes some sort of scandal or some kind of major blunder to get a significant shift in public sentiment like that, where, you know, someone may be leading and suddenly, you know, loses the race in the end. And I think back to the Jefferson Parish sheriff's race between Joe LoPinto and John Fortunato, and where Fortunato answered the question about whether he would support Mike Ginnie or not. And you saw this abrupt shift in sentiment towards the candidates, and LoPinto went on to win that election despite being down by double digits early on in the campaign.
We've seen in recent elections where the front runners, and I think of the governor's race, even the last presidential race, where when someone has a big lead, whether it's in one state on the national level or throughout the state, like it was on the Louisiana level, where down the home stretch, we heard less and less from the candidates with the huge lead. Do you anticipate, or would you advise Helena Moreno that the best thing she can do now is just stick to her messaging, her advertising, and expose herself as little as possible to a possible scandal at this point?
I think it probably goes against her DNA to sit back and kind of coast. And, you know, she doesn't think like that, and she doesn't behave like that. She's always out there campaigning. She attends numerous events. So I don't think that she's going to basically kind of sit back on her laurels with this lead. She's going to be aggressive and energetic from October 11th.
Yeah, I just remember, you know, Governor Landry, Senator Kennedy, not wanting to debate down the home stretch because they had a big lead and not really exposing themselves to the possibility of saying something that could be a blunder or something that could derail or give anybody else anything to grasp onto.
Yeah, she may decide not to debate, but that's different than going out there and campaigning and meeting the people where they are. And I expect that to continue.
All right. Any prognostications, any expectations you're willing to share at this point?
She's within the margin of error of winning it on primary on October 11th. People are hesitant to, basically prognosticate that someone will win in the primary, but it's a distinct possibility.
Fair enough. Anything else you want to share with folks as we now look ahead to the October 11th primary and we're less than a month away from early voting beginning for the race to be mayor of New Orleans? Will the indictment of the current mayor have any significant impact on this race?
It doesn't seem to have any impact on the race. The campaigns, they put out their statements, but that's about it. People are looking to move forward. They want to put this administration behind them.
Anything else you want to share before we let you run?
Make sure you get out and vote. Turnout in the last election was 29%. And so we need to get everyone out there and cast your ballot, express your viewpoint at the ballot box.
Professor, thank you for taking a little time out of your Labor Day to join us here on WWL. I know we'll be hearing from you quite a bit as we now head into this home stretch before the primary for mayor of New Orleans. Enjoy the rest of your holiday.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
UNO pollster and Professor Ed Chervenak here on WWL. All right, coming up next, I always love when we get to do this. Chef Kev joins us here on WWL. Labor Day, people love to cook out, grill, and eat. It's a celebratory day in honor of all of our hard work and our laboring. So we'll get some great ideas from Chef Kev coming up next about maybe what we can eat today. If you've got questions, don't hesitate to jump on the line or text us now, 504-260-1870.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.